When you travel and you're in a different world, it's being away a week is like being away a month because it's such a different world. Number one, and I see everyone's coming in like Nami is hitting me at once. But I want to give you I know that where you come from, generally speaking, you give a gift to a Rebbe for Hanukkah. However, Baruch Hashem, I'm at the stage in life that I want to give you a gift for Hanukkah. So, Jay, I want you to do the following. I have a volume that was published for Tztaka, but I won't take any Tztaka from anyone. It was published by Shvatami. Someday, if the fellows will be in a position to give Tztaka, so they'll give the Shvatami. But I have the right to give that volume away. It's my volume. I want to give a gift to each student that doesn't have it, the Rakafet Aharon. Now, what I want from you for Tuesday is a list of all the students who want it with their Hebrew name, because I'll inscribe each volume to my Talmud. I prefer to inscribe it in Hebrew. So you give me that list on Tuesday, and then I'll be able to bring it for next week, okay? That's number one, Rakafet Aharon. Some fellows studied me in the past, got it, but those that don't have it, this is the chance to get a gift from the Rebbe for Hanukkah. That's one, two. Next week, obviously, I can't say shiur in the afternoon on Hanukkah, but what I would like to do, with your permission, is make the shiur next Sunday morning. I'm able to do it because Midreshit is cancelled out. Is Sunday morning a good time? What's the problem? You have Nechama Leiv with Sunday morning. Can I make the shiur Monday morning? Or you have something else? Tell me. If not, I'll cancel out. I mean, I'm not. I realize you have to give up the shiur for Hanukkah. It's not the end of the world. But I would prefer if I missed a week, and I'm going to miss 2 weeks in January. I'll be in the States then for 2 weeks. Then I'll be working hard. But that's a different story. But anyway, if it's shayach to make the shiur, I can reschedule the shiur for Monday morning next week because I'm canceled out of Midrashit. Jay, I leave you a committee of one to evaluate the situation and tell me either yes or no. If the answer is no, I won't be offended. I'll understand. The boys have other commitments, chavrutah, etc. I understand it's a chutzpah of me to ask. So if you tell me no, it's no. Okay. But next Sunday there's no shiur because it's Hadlakat Neirat at this time. As a matter of fact, I will be in this very room next Sunday. We're hosting a party for my mother, should live me well, who just turned 80. So in this very room, Be'ezrat Hashem will be here. You're responsible for your end and any other help. Okay. Now, I have to be honest with you. I feel like a cow with a lot of milk. And I only have to hold myself back to begin slowly and clearly and not confuse you. I also have to say that the Rabbi Soloveitchik course is going to reach very big heights in the coming weeks. And I would sincerely, it's a shame if people can't come in to hear the lectures because of the exigencies of your Adaya or passing an exam. What is it in Bab Metzia? What are you learning this year? Bab Metzia or Ketuvot? What is it? Baba Kama. You know, Baba Kama will be here for many years to come, but the Rav, I don't know how many years you're going to have a chance to hear the Rav as he actually was. Okay, now we're speaking about Minhag. And we made the point last week that when all is said and done, minhag is very important in determining halacha, whether it's certainly in mammon. By the way, one of the questions my daughter was asked, you just passed her orals. You probably read about it in the papers, but the first women rabbinic lawyers were officially given smicha last week. My daughter was one of them. And on her oral exam with three dayanim, believe it or not, one of the questions they asked was this very question, if a woman wants a ketuvah without any monetary guarantees. And of course, the answer is, when it comes to money, you can be matna mashakatav batorah, minik can be mavatal halacha. When it comes to isa, chas v'chalila, minik can't be mavatal halacha, but the minik can determine the halacha when you're in doubt. And as I showed you from all the sources, it's talking about people who care, people who observe, and people who are from. It's not chas v'chalila. I showed you the Rashbash, and it's not the conservative movement. And again, I don't have to be melamed zchut and Solomon Schechter, but having grown up with Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessin, and hearing all his musa shmusin, and remembering the way the mashgiach related to Professor Schechter, I have to say that I think I'm right. You know, a theory is a theory, and I don't want to overwhelm you that I'm right. I think I'm right. The man didn't think it out to the end. And that's what the Rashbash says. You start being mevatel everything. Now, obviously, it's a lot easier to have a minog to be machmir in something than to have a minog to be mekil. And this you see all over. For instance, the OU, I had a very interesting incident. The home I was staying was on the same block as Zev lives. I didn't know that. I was staying at the home of my wife's sister and brother-in-law. And they're very pedantic. They're not very learned Jews, but they're very observant Jews, very good Jews. So my wife buys a raisin bread. An interesting story. She gets to America, and her sheet there is, whenever you go to America, you have to eat there what they don't have in Israel. When you go to Israel, you eat what we don't have anywhere else. So she buys a raisin bread. She dreams about this raisin bread, a sun-kissed raisin bread, buys the raisin bread, and it says on it, K Dairy. So my brother-in-law, when I come in, a week later, they're waiting for me to come to paskin out the Shelah. My brother-in-law says to me, it doesn't have an OU, a K, it means nothing. I look at it, I say, I can't believe it. A big bakery, it says Arnold Bakery is the baker. I can't believe their shtick. But I say to my brother-in-law, I'll find out. So I pick up a phone to Rabbi Emanuel Hoser, chairman of the RCA Commission on Kashrut, and he tells me it's a machlekes ha-poiskim. We all know this, whether you're allowed to make milchik of bread. If you bake milchik of bread, you have to make a siman on the bread. You know what? You're learning your day, or you haven't gotten to yet, pasav cholov. But you know what I'm talking about? Now, what's the shaila? If saying D on the package is good enough. So because there's so many machmirim in America, what does the OU do? Whenever they give a hechshir on bread that has dairy in it, they don't put the OU, they put the K. You follow me? So that bread really was baked under OU supervision. But it said K dairy, so my brother-in-law went up to heaven, Baruch Hashem, it's an OU. I went up to heaven at Baruch Hashem, I was right. And you should go up to heaven, because that's an example of what we're talking about here in Halacha. That the minhag, to be machmir, this is very easy to do. And the OU follows it all the time. The same thing with glot. All the OU meat is glot. Well, give me 1 second. So you'll ask a question. How come the OU is makpid on glot? After all, the Polish Jews weren't makpid on glot. The Litvish Jews weren't makpid on glot. The German Jews weren't makpid on glot. Who was makpid on glot? The Hungarians and the Frumsvardim. Well, with all due respect to the Hungarians and the Frumsvardim, they're a distinct minority. But they were Masbimi years ago in the OU. If they wouldn't take the minute lahachmir, they wouldn't be able to sell their product, because that's the way it works. The better your heksha, the better the name, the better the reputation, the more people that trust you, the more you sell. So that's what we mean. It's easier to make a minute lahachmir than to make a minute lahakel. Nevertheless, when a minig is betaught, what did we see last week? Minig and gehenim, interchangeable. Avi, yes. No, not all KD is under the OU, but if you see it's Arnold's Bakery and all the other products of Arnold's are OU, Parava, the K-dash dairy are under the OU too. You follow? If you take another bakery, give me the name of another big bakery in the New York area. There's some other big bakeries, not Arnold's. What's the other one? I can't hear. No. A big Gayesha bakery, a big bakery. So there too, you'll see, I take a look. Everything is OU when it's Parva, and when it's dairy, it's K-dash dairy. Okay, so that's the example. That's what we're talking about. Now, and I showed you there's a Rambam and a Ramban with where we went in. We got involved with Hilchot Maisa. We got involved with a little bit of the laws of Shviat. And I showed you there that it could very well be in a Din de Rabbanon that the Minhag goes against the Halacha. But it's no big problem for me, and I explain to you why. Because every din de rabbanon is given over to the human element. Hatzibur is the determining factor. And if it happens to be charuvim, and we take off maisa b'shat l'kita instead of chanata, so the rabbis were satisfied, at least they're taking off maisa. The people determine the likat to them is more meaningful than the chanata. And in a din de rabbanon, where it's talui b'dei hatzibur, The Tzibur has a right to express his opinion. And this is minig, and this is what we saw. Now, I want to endorse everything we said about Minhag, and I by far we haven't exhausted the topic, but certainly on a working level you have insight, and on a halachic level you have insight, and we'll come back to this when I deal with your a day in depth and the quintus of the Ramah. I'll come back to this and I'll make it stand up and live for you many different ways. Again, it gives you a feeling into the halacha. See, when what I just said to you now, I didn't understand. As a kid of 14, I couldn't understand what it means, Shein HaTzibur Chol Lamod Bo. But as a Talmud, as someone who's been learning for 40 years plus, I understand already the flow of the rabbinic law. All right, if they couldn't accept it the way the rabbis wanted it, then the law switches to the way the people understand it. That's the right b'tshita, and I understand the Rabbat very well. Now, I want to show you a very fascinating Nachlat Shiva. And there's one term in here, there's a catchword he uses that becomes very important in modern times. First of all, the Nachlat Shiva, Chelek Aleph, Siman Chav Sayin, Ot Tet. In the Israeli edition, we're talking about page 143. Who's the author of the Nachlat Shiva? It was a German rabbi, Reb Shmuel, but Reb David Halevi, who lived in the 17th century. And why is the Nachlat Shiva important? Why does every rabbi have the Nachlat Shiva in his library? It's one volume that I've used time and again. No, tell me why. The forms of all the ktuvot, of whatever you need for ktuvot, for gittin, of every type of ktuvot, for a betula, for a be'ula, all the text of all the different shtarot you have in the Nachlat Shiva. The Nachlat Shiva is an invaluable sefer. It explains, I mean, I used it all the time for ktuvot, but it has shtari erusin and inheritance and git. It has all shtarot, all gittin that you will ever have to deal with in the rabbinate. And it was written in the 17th century, which makes it on the dawn of the modern period. You look into the Nachlat Shiva, he starts ripping apart the innovators. Ach, I'm quoting him word by word now. I have a Xerox here called Afim Chadoshim Ikarav Bo She'asu Eizet Davai Yisa B'Tawuto Machmat Kali Dat Im B'nei Shein B'nei Torah V'im Nishtarashu B'chei Pamim V'Shlosh Yiyeb Shala Shumarela Hotzili Min HaGam Hara Afilu B'Yisa Shal Torah V'afilu Ameyarit Suburim Shein Yodim Ben Yumin L'Smol Meragla B'Picha Minagoy Kehalacha V'Yoysin Minag Mimenu Kashezer Davashkichu Ragil Tuve Bonotenu HaRabim
And his description there, see, it's on the dawn of the modern era. That description you can practically translate into the 18th, the 19th, the 20th century. And it shows you, and this is something I've developed I'm working on another book behind the book that I'm really working on now. What's the difference? I have practically three chapters ready, but I put it aside to work on Rabbi Soloveitchik. But I developed the following idea when you say theories, I don't want to sound arrogant and say, I know I'm right. I hope I'm right. I think I'm right. But who can be certain? But I developed the following theory. When we were growing up, what were we taught in school? We're taught in school, Mendelssohn stepped out of the ghetto. And the minute Mendelssohn stepped out of the ghetto, the Jews started going downhill. Am I right? That's what we're taught. And if your teacher learned in Lakewood, so he'll rip the hell out of Mendelssohn. As I've said more than once, when I learned in Lakewood, I thought Mendelssohn's last name was Yimach Shmo. I didn't know any Hebrew, so whenever they said Mendelssohn Yimach Shmo, I thought Mendelssohn was his first name and Yimach Shmo was his second name. So, fine, that's a nice space Yaakov approach. It's a nice art school approach. It has no truth. The truth of the matter is that the lights of the new world started twinkling to the Jew already with the Renaissance, with the revolution in the Catholic Church, with the Protestant Revolution, with the Age of the Voyages, and you know, little by little, it's a new world opening up there, and there are cranks in the ghetto. And already you find in the 17th and 18th centuries, before Mendelssohn came out of the ghetto, the Jews are getting involved in a lot of little sins. I don't know what you want to call boys and girls dancing together. A big sin, a little sin. In my opinion, it's a big sin. Because today we have AIDS because boys and girls were dancing together 200 years ago, in my opinion. Let it stand. But already you have so many sources that in the communities the boys and girls are dancing together. The Rabbanim have to fight it. They're yelling, they're shouting. Chol HaMoed becomes like a regular weekday. Everyone's going to work. You find already so many breakdowns. It didn't happen overnight. It happened gradually. So here the Nachlat Shiva describes, and these are catch words, Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u. I'll give someone a U.S. quarter, a silver quarter. A silver quarter I'm offering to anyone who can tell me who made these words unbelievably famous in his last will and testament, in his tzava'ah. Chadashim mikarav ba'o. Who said it? You got the silver quarter. Tell the class about it. Go ahead, God, tell the class. Wait. Turn a quarter, you got to know what he's talking about. Wait a minute, this is debatable now. I'll have to put it before a baiting whether you get the quarter or a regular quarter. 1 second. So, you went off the path already. Anyway, the Chatam Sofer, the most famous will written in modern times, was the will of Reb Moshe Sofer, and he was ripping the hell out of Moses Mendelssohn. And his Beyur and his Perish on the Chumash and the Tirgum on the Chumash and the innovations that his students made, and he calls them Chadashim Mikarov Ba'u. And these were catchwords for the innovators. And here you see 100 years before the Chatam Sofer, 100 years before, the Nachlat Shiva is using exactly the same words. And his description, he says, sometimes he says they did it by accident, sometimes they did it because they were Kaleidat, sometimes they weren't B'nai Torah, but they did it once or twice. The minute they innovated, no Mora Hara could stop them. No one, he says. V'afilu ha-me'aretz. I mean, this description is literally the United States. It's the conservative movement. It's certain elements of modern orthodoxy. V'afilu ha-me'aretz u'burim sheni yodim ben yamin l'smal. But everyone says, minig oka halacha, that a minig knocks out the halacha, a minig describes the halacha, a minig completes the halacha. And he says, lo aleinu, in our city, these ignorant people have even eradicated Torah law. Okay, this is the Nachlat Shiva, and it's an amazing document because of the time. If we were quoting Reb Moshe from the 20th century, if we were quoting Reb Zalchanan from the 19th century, if we were quoting Reb Yaakov Emden from the 18th century, it wouldn't be such an amazing document. But look what it shows you, that already 300-400 years ago, the lights of enlightenment were beckoning. The Jew already was making innovations. Changes were happening. And here they are, 300 plus years ago, minig changes halacha, telling the rabbis, butt out, don't bother us. Chadashim mikarav ba'u. So we have to have a proper approach to minhag, and we have to understand it and know when yes and when no, when it applies, and when we have to surrender to halacha, and if it's a minig that's wrong, then minig equal gehenim. Okay. Now I want to go further, and I want to come into to the most basic question of all, and this question will occupy us for many months to come. And this is this volume that Mark was good enough to lend me Jason was good enough to lend me on Machlokis, a fascinating little volume by a fellow called Lempel. What was his first name? Tzvi Lempel from Staten Island. Many years ago, I read this guy had no mazel. He did a translation of the Rambam's Hakdama to Seder Zrayim. And unknown to him, Dr. Fred Rosner did a translation of the exact text. And they both came out exactly the same time. And Fred Rosner's was on a higher level, simply intellectually. The English was better. But I was very impressed because the English here is a lot better, except once in a while, it's English, it's a yeshivish of English. Like there's a footnote there, Jacob Rosenthal, a younger man in the Kollel. In 100 years from now, they're going to read the footnote, a younger man in the Kollel. What is he talking about? You know, and that younger man will be an old great-grandfather. It has to be, or he has, other words, that it holds water, it doesn't hold water. You can't write like that when you write scholarship. This theory does not hold water is not exactly good English. I'm surprised that the editor, someone, a stylist, should have spotted that. But he deals with the problem. He's very troubled with the problem. Why is there machloket? After all, if God gave the Torah, God gave one Torah, why is there machloket? I'll tell you the truth. I'm not troubled with that problem because I love machloket. Anyone who grew up in a yeshiva, went into learning, and knows what learning is about, machloket is the heart of Torah. It's beautiful. You fight, you debate, you argue, you sharpen your mind, you sharpen your wits. You know, I sort of believe like Adam HaRishon and Adam Sheni, if you know what I'm talking about, like the first creation and the second creation. The first creation was for Gan Eden, no machloket. The second creation is for human beings. Ah, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, daf peichet amid bet. Plenty of machloket. How do we deal with machloket? That's the question I want to deal with now. Okay. How do we paskin? There's always machloket. Open up the first Mishnah. Even such a simple matter, and this is what bothers him. I love the way he states the questions. Can it be that the Jews didn't say Kriyat Shema at night? That they didn't know when they had to finish? What's the matter? They didn't have a tradition? How can it be there can be a machloket, the very first Mishnah, a quarter of the night, a third of the night, half the night, all night, what goes on in that first, the Mishnah and the Sugya around it. So what do you mean machloket? Now, how do we paskin? The most basic klal of psak is found in the Rishonim, and this influences all of the halacha until this very moment. I'm quoting the Rush to Bab Metzia, Perek Gimel Sif Yud in the Rush. Now you quote the Rush. You have to say Perek Gimel Sif Yud in the Rush, and the Rush says Halacha Kabatrayi Meyabaya V'Rava V'Elech. Avo b'dor shalif nehem, ein halacha ketalmid b'makom harav. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean? A halacha is always like the last, after Abaye and Rafa. So first of all, we have to ask a very simple question. Why did Abaye and Rafa have such unique status? Why is it that before Abaye and Rava, we always paskin like the earlier generations? After Abaye and Rava, halacha kabatra'i, which we'll come to in a minute. Why before Abaye and Rava is it zil kri beravu? Is it axiomatic the halacha must always be like the earlier generations? Who can tell me? It's not a difficult matter. It's not esoteric. It's very simple. What do Abaye and Rava represent? Gentlemen, what does it represent? Bitul Hasmicha. Generally speaking, Jason, and although I know it's a machloket, and believe me, I know it better than anyone in this room, because Rabbi Revel had some very unique research on when Smicha was finally abolished, but generally speaking, the consensus is that Smicha was abolished at the time of Abaye for Rava. And this is the reason. Abaye and Rava backwards, they had smicha, ish mi pi ish. When you have smicha, ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody in the world can be smarter than you. No one in the world can outweigh you. You are part of the original tradition. You are part of the original Masorah. Ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu, you're on top of the world. No one but no one, Yaakov, can come in and contradict you. And this is the way I understand it. This is why, in Talibayev HaRava, they had unbelievable authority. And this may very well be why, and by the way, in the book that Jason lent me, he also struggles with this, with the Rambam and Hilchot Mamon. This may also explain to you why in the earlier generations, the halacha will always be like a Tana when he argues with an Amora. And the halacha will always be like an early Amora against the later Amora. Because the Tanoim and the early Amorim had smicha ish mi pi ish. The minute that smicha is abolished, you lose your status. You lose the Kabbalah. You lose your unique halot. And the halacha now moves into different areas. So this is why the Rush says, ish mi pi ish, Abaye v'Rava, in Tula Abaye v'Rava, we always follow the earlier authority. However, what happens after Abaye v'Rava? So here we have another Rush. The Rush to Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet Sif Vav. And this Rush is very famous, and I'm quoting him, Anu Tovsin Divrei HaChronim Ika Kivin Sheyadu Sfarat HaRishonim V'Sivratam V'Hichriyu Ben Eilu HaSfarat V'Yomdu Alika Shel Davar. That once the smicha is abolished, we are all equal. We are all ordinary mortals.
You all know that the smicha we get that some of you are struggling for from yeshiva has nothing to do with ishmi piyish. The smicha we get today is a heta hora that our Rebbe gives us permission to paskin in his presence. It has nothing to do with the original smicha. So what do we say? We say that we know the earlier opinions and we analyze them and we try to understand them and then we reach our conclusions. And it's our conclusions that count. And that's why halakha kabatra e. Now, what does this mean? Halakha kabatra e. With all the respects, who are we? What are we? Who's teaching you Torah? Ribbono shel Olam, here in Gris Kola you have a fantastic faculty. Chama Leibovich, Ron Lichtenstein, David Miller, others, fantastic faculty. Now, compare your faculty to whom we studied with. I yet saw my Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, in his prime. I saw Rabbi Moshe Shatzkis almost, I would say, in his prime. Almost in his prime. Rabbi David Lifshitz in his prime. Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen the Mashgiach in his prime, with all due respects to Yaakov's father. I don't want to put down my chavruta, my childhood friend. But Ribbono shel Olam, look who we saw. Come on, do we come to their shoelaces? And I told you more than once, the Rav, when the Rav spoke about Reb Chaim, when the Rav spoke about the Beit HaLevi, he totally was mavatel himself. I told you more than once with that unbelievable incident. You know, when the Rav came, I can't believe all the garbage I picked up. But someone else told me, you know, every moron comes out of the woodwork, so someone criticized the Rav. He didn't daven with a minyan. I couldn't believe my ears. It's true. The day that he traveled to New York, when he came in by train, the years that he came in by train, he didn't daven with a minyan. It was simply impossible. That day that he left Boston, he couldn't daven with a minyan that morning. So this idiot is criticizing the Rav. He didn't daven with a minyan. He was leaving. I couldn't believe my ears. So I told the person telling me, I said, you tell that idiot. But what he did do is, if it was a Monday and he missed Kriyat HaTorah, I told you more than once, he would make a minyan. You know, when we finish here, he would say, where do I have a minyan of boys that didn't daven mincha? Be honest, be honest. Where did he have a minyan? Within a minute, there were 50 guys that didn't hear Kriyat HaTorah that morning. So the Rav made Kriyat HaTorah. People were so stupid, they thought he had a minyan that you read Torah at mincha. No, his halacha was that you had to read Torah Monday, Thursday, but to the other, it didn't matter when. So he'd make a Kriyat HaTorah. So one time we took out the Torah, we read, and they found a psul in the Torah. Well, I forget already what it was. So the Rav passing, they have to fix it. But he said, oh, if I would be like my Zayda would take out the Torah and start all over again and reread the Torah. But he says, I'm not like my Zayda, I'm not like my father. What can I do? I'll be Samach and the Ramah. But, so I want to ask you a question. How can there be a halacha kabatrayi when you fellas are sitting here learning Torah, I'll talk about myself, with lowly worms, with weasels, with rodents, and if I may quote Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, I'm quoting Rabbi Yisrael now, please, I'm not being modest, I'm not being humble, just the opposite. I was in America, I shot a little, they know how to learn there, I came back a little bit more arrogant. Take my words, but I'm not being humble. But I'm quoting Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. Rabbi Yisrael used to say, what gave us the right to teach Torah? In a Rishonim, Kamalachim, the Gemara in Bamitzi, Anu B'nei Adam. In a Rishonim, B'nei Adam, Rishonim, Anu Chamorim. Rafi, Loka, Chamor, Shal, Pinkas, Ben Yair. So Rabbi Yisrael used to say, you know what gave us the right to teach Torah? Because in our youth, we saw great people. That gave us the right, that he said, we're not teaching because we know something. We're only teaching because we yet saw the giants of Torah of yesteryear. So if this is so, and I'm telling you, when I think of my Rebbeim, I pity you for the Rebbeim you have. When I think of the giants I had, and when I saw the giants, when I remember the way the Rav spoke about Reb Chaim, with the way Reb Moshe Shatzkis spoke about Reb Itzla Blaza, his stepfather-in-law, when I remember the way Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen spoke about the Alta from Slabodka, Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, we were shaking, the room was shaking when he spoke of his Rebbe. When Reb David Lifshitz spoke about Reb Shimon Shkop, there were tears in his eyes. So how can you have a concept, halakha kabatra'i? Look, I'm asking a wonderful, wonderful question. How can this be? The Rush says that, I'll show you in a minute what this concept means, but I'm going step by step. Everyone knows that Sal got smicha already. Sal knows halacha kabatra'i. How can there be a concept like this? And gentlemen, this is the way Torah works. And this comes back to the old Gemara that I've quoted so many times of Bab Metzia, Tanu D'Achna'i. It's a very simple question. Does Torah function within a human context, or is Torah given to angels? If Torah was given to angels, this concept would be worthless. Then the girl, Ein Hachinami, the nice from girls, and I have to tell you, I've taught college kids so many years in BMT, I taught 20 years, I taught in Michalar, and now in Midrashot Maria, I'm teaching girls for 23 years. There's nothing like a nice from girl. The frumest boy in BMT did not have the simplicity and the sincerity and the devotedness of a little girl in Midrashot Maria. It's an open Rav Hirsch and Chumash, look it up in Vayikra. It's towards the end of Vayikra, I believe it's Mem Gimel, Perik Mem Gimel. Rav Hirsch has a whole analysis of why women don't need mitzvah taseh. See what he has to say and listen to that idiot Rakefet's addendum as he gave it in the Dreshet Marie a few weeks ago. It's unbelievable. If that insight is right, it's unbelievable. But a nice little frum girl, she says, "Oh, Rabbi Rakefet, you're a nice man, you're a good teacher, but honestly, Rabbi Rakefet, I can't ask you my questions in halacha. How do you compare to Rabbi Akiva? I am going to Rabbi Akiva's grave, and I'm going to knock on his grave and ask him my question and say, Rabbi Akiva, please, if the answer is no, how does the Gemara put it? Let steam come out of the grave once, and if the answer is yes, let steam come out twice." And if we would go with the viewpoint that nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet, then that girl would be right. But God went with the viewpoint, lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet, with all that it implies. And Torah has to function within a human framework. And this is why halacha kabat ra'i. Because what are we saying? Ein ladam shofet, kam tevelit ala shofet. How does the Chumash put it in Pashat Shoftim? Who's the balkori here? Ala shofet asheyeyeh? Bayamim hahem. What does the Gemara say a number of times in Chazal? Yiftach bedaro, kishmul bedaro. And this is the basic understanding. And when you come to me, we are living Torah here now in 1994, Labriot. And you want an answer now. And you are depending upon the fact that I have looked up the sources. Obviously, you're not going to ask me a question if I don't know the sources. Obviously, I wouldn't accept the question. But if you're going to ask me a question, whatever the question is, and I work out the sources, and I get back to you, and I say that this is the answer, this is halacha kabat ra'i. Because we have to assume, I know the previous, I understand the previous, and I'm the person alive today, you're alive today. We have to deal within the context of today. Evan, give me a few minutes and then I'll open it. So this is number one. And this is axiomatic, with all due respect to the previous generation. My Rebbe is not here anymore. Reb David is not here anymore. And I hate to say it, the responsibility for perpetuating Torah in our generation falls upon our shoulders. The collective we, myself and every other name I mentioned, and Rabbi Blau and Rabbi Klukop. And what can we do? Our shoulders are weak. We're not strong, but we have the responsibility, and we have to paskin the ein l'dayan ela mashay navraot. Now, can anyone tell me, God, let's see if you can earn that tshuva. I'll give you a second chance at that quarter now. Tell me who dealt with this very problem in his introduction to his sfarim. The whole introduction is devoted to this. Jason? That's exactly. Rav Meisher is very troubled by this terrible question. You have to see that introduction. It's the only introduction Rav Meisher wrote. The only introduction, that's what you're going to share the quarter. The only introduction Rav Meisher wrote, and he deals, this is a magnificent, and you see, he's overwhelmed. To where am I? What am I? How am I? How do I come to Rabbi Akiva? And he says word by word everything I've said in today's lecture, except he doesn't mention the names I mentioned. He didn't study with Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik. He didn't study with Rav Moshe Shatskis. But it's exactly this approach, and we have no other approach. Halacha kabatra'i ein l'dayanam l'shen of ra'ot yiftach b'doro k'shmul b'doro. Period. Now, let me go one step further. You know how far this klal goes, and this is crucially important. You'll understand why later today. It's not just halacha kabatra'i. But we have another major klal in halacha. As a matter of fact, it says in the Torah, acharei rabim lahatot. And all of you know that this is the heart of psak halacha, of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, choshen mishpat, and ibeitin, we always put it to a majority vote. Acharei rabim lahatot. This is elementary. Everyone understands it. Fine. Jay, now, tell me, what if 2 centuries ago, we know that 50 tshuvot were written for the sake of argument, saying that if you come to Israel for Yontif Sheni, you must observe a complete and total Yontif Sheni. And I come along in the year 1994, and I paskin, no. All you have to observe is one day Yontif. I am going against 50 different opinions that were 50 to 1, and even though I found a tshuva and I found a Chacham Tzvi, the Chacham Tzvi in the course of time was outvoted 50 to 1. No, Donnie, what gives me the right to have my opinion? Do you know something? That the Pitrei Tshuva Paskins, that when we say Halacha Kabat Ra'i, you can even take a Shita Jachit against the rabbin. It's an amazing thing. You don't have to add up opinions. You don't have to follow a majority. You have to follow what you halachically, conscientiously understand and believe to be correct. Where do you find this Pitrei Tshuva? Pitrei Tshuva to Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Siman Chaf Hei, Sif Cotton Chet. By the way, just a word on the Pitrei Tshuva and the Sharei Tshuva. Do you know what I'm talking about? Anyone know what I'm talking about when I say Pitrei Tshuva, Sharei Tshuva? Gentlemen, again, it's the Pitrei Tshuva, the Choshen Mishpat, Siman Chaf Chet, Chaf Hei, 25, Sif Cotton Chet, Subdivision 8. Who wrote the Pitrei Tshuva? Rav Avram Tzvi Hirsch Eisenstadt. He was a Rav in a city in the Kovna district. His years, 1813 to 1868. Who wrote the Sharei Tshuva? Who wrote the Sharei Tshuva? Reb Chaim Mordechai Margolis, a Rav in Dubna, in Poland at the same time. The Sharei Tshuva is on Orach Chaim, and the Pitrei Tshuva is on Eben Ezra, Yoredeya, and Choshen Mishpat. Now, it's a very interesting historical comment. These two svarim were written at approximately the same time. Why? What has happened here? And it's very simple. It comes back to something we spoke about in the very start of the year. Originally, people knew everything. They didn't need indexes. They didn't need guidebooks. By the 19th century, there were so many shelet and shuvot written, and learning already was not what it used to be. People needed guidebooks. So it's amazing that the Sharei Tshuva and the Pitrei Tshuva complemented each other approximately the same time. And this Sharei Tshuva and Pitrei Tshuva serve as the kickoff point for modern times of the Otzah HaPoskim. In other words, now already the Sharei Tshuva and the Pitrei Tshuva are not sufficient because so much more has been written, so we today have the Otzah HaPoskim. And just as Achronim called the Sharei Tshuva and the Pitrei Tshuva without going back to the sources, today people quote the Otzer HaPoskim without going back to the original Svarim. It shows you how accepted these Svarim were. So look what you have here. Halacha Kabatra'i. Why? Yiftach B'doro K'shmul B'doro. We have to assume the rabbi you're asking the question to today has worked out all the sources. He has the paskin in 1994. And more than that, he even has a right, yachid keneged rabbim. He can paskin the way he wants. As long as there hasn't been a consensus, as long as the ballpark is open, yachid keneged rabbim, he can paskin whatever he wants. Why not before Abayin Rava? because the smicha that they had gave them such authority that we simple mortals cannot contest them. But the minute that smicha disappears, we simple mortals have a right to contest them. Now, I'll show you something amazing. I'll open it up right after this. You can ask me whatever you want, just give me another 2 minutes. Show you something amazing. This is the source. Not simple to come up with. Everyone quotes a rabbinic aphorism. It does not exist in Shas. Everyone quotes, when we talk about this concept, you've heard it time and again. We are nanasim, the warts, standing on the shoulders of giants. Have you heard that, Yaakov? Have you heard that concept? What does it mean? What does it mean? It's what I told you a minute ago. What gives me the right to teach? I'm a dwarf. I'm a pygmy. I'm a nanas. But I studied with Rav Soloveitchik. I studied with Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson. I studied with Rav Aaron Cutler. I spoke in Psak with Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. I spoke in Psak with Rav Moshe Feinstein. What I've told you now, these are all facts. Well, if a little pygmy named Aaron Rakefet studied with such teachers and spoke in Psak with such poskim, then I am a pygmy standing on the shoulders of giants. And the rabbinic analogy is beautiful. Now, who can see further? Rav Soloveitchik is 6'3". But if I'm on his shoulders, who's taller, me or Rav Soloveitchik? I'm taller. If I'm taller, I can see further. I'm smarter. And that's exactly the analogy. Of course we're pygmies. Of course we're dwarfs. Of course we're not malachim. Of course we're not bnei adam. Of course we're not like the chamor of Pinchas ben Yair. Of course we're pushtakim. I'll tell you an amazing story in a second on that. An amazing story. Of course we're all that. But we stand on the shoulders of giants. Now you know who said this? I had such trouble finding this. By the way, I don't know if this is the earliest source, and there's some very good boys in this class. Some of you are going to be thorough scholars. If you can check out and find an earlier source, let me know. It is attributed to the Shibolei Halekid. This is a Rishon. The Shibolei Halekid by Rab Avraham Harofer. The problem is that no one has a proper edition of the Shibolei Halekid. I finally found an edited edition by the late Professor Shmuel Kalman Mirsky. He's my professor in graduate school. May he rest in peace. The man who devoted his life to the Shilta. He was a legendary scholar. I cannot tell you how much this man knew. And he got a doctorate from Columbia U. He was over, he was my age when he got the doctorate. What a man. He was rabbi of the Young Israel of Baruch Park. He was as much matim to be rabbi of the Young Israel of Baruch Park as I'm matim to be Meir Tzidkun's Gemara Rebbe at this moment. But nevertheless, he had to make panasa. You know what, why you pay this before the 40 million? Now why you're dealing with an institution that can afford to pay its rebbeim. I hope somebody's listening. But it's before the 40 million. So he was rabbi. Said, what a scholar. Anyway, he edited a journal called Surah. It was put out by YU and by Rabbi Mirsky at a private foundation for Surah. It was a whole story. I'm not going to go into it now. Anyway, in the 1966 edition of Surah, he printed the Shibolei Leket, his editing of it. And beginning on page 107 through 108, in the Shibolei Leket's introduction, he says exactly this concept. And he says that the mashal was a mashal he heard from Gentile professors. Chachmei Hagoyim. Shapilosophiim Sha'alu Lagadol Shabahem Ramlu Halo Anakn Modim Shishonim Chachmuvi Skill Yotani Menu. And this guy said the great philosophers, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, they knew so much more than us. And how do we get the right to argue with them and change their opinions? And the philosopher said, who sees further, a giant or a little pygmy on the shoulders of a giant?
further, because right now he is standing on the shoulders of a giant. כך אנחנו ננסים רוכבים על צווי הנקים מבני שרינו חכמתם ואנחנו ממיקים ומכוח חכמתם חכמתנו לומר כל מה שאנו אומרים ולא שאנו גדול מהם. And this is the Shiboli Halekid, and it's not to say חס וחלילה Aaron Rakefet is smarter than Reb Moshe Feinstein, and Aaron Rakefet is smarter than the Aruch HaShulchan, and Aaron Rakefet can paskin against the Shilat Yavetz, חס וחלילה. But because Aaron Rakefet is standing on their shoulders, he can see further, and this is why Halakha Kabatrahi, and this is the Shiboli Halekid, and this is the second point I wanted to make today. Now, I have to tell you something in parentheses. I'm going to come to it later today. As I already said it, I might as well finish it. Yaakov, do me a favor, see if there's any water in the closet. Because I know when the tape goes off, I know it reminds me to drink a drop of water. I have to tell you something amazing. In the latest issue of Tradition that I saw a magnificent article on the whole question of manuscripts by a fellow who's learning in Lakewood. I couldn't believe that this article was written by Lakewood. It has to be Rabbi Bleich's son of why you must have a boy in Lakewood. The name is Bleich. The article was on a fantastic level. So from that article, I already concluded that Lakewood of today is not the Lakewood of my time. In my time, it would be impossible for any real Lakewood boy to have written such an article, and yet to publish it in Tradition, they would have hounded him out of Lakewood, put him to Chevron 50 times over. But Lakewood today evidently has a lot of students, and many of them better scholars and finer scholars, etc. Now, I also, at this wedding I was at last Sunday, my niece married a boy who learned in Lakewood, learned in Mir. As a matter of fact, I don't know, my mother told me he became a Chabadnik. When I mentioned it to my niece, she wanted to kill me. I got such a lecture. What, he's a Litvisher, he's a Litvak. I mean, the way they know all these cold words, I can't believe it. So I apologized. I didn't mean anything wrong. I didn't know. Lakewood guy, there's a number of Lakewood guys.
Nathan Goldberg, I don't see. Nathan, is he okay? Abraham Goldman is here. Jason Nepel is here. Mark Fader, I don't see. Jason, tell Mark I met his father. I met his father at the wedding, or his parents at the wedding. Tell Mark, right? Mark is from Woodmere. I met his parents at the wedding. The other wedding was that. Shlomo Holman is here. Uri Cohn is getting married. I'm getting married in the morning. Yaakov Kermeyer. Ding dong, they don't know what I'm singing here. Ding dong, the Jacob is here. Ellie Schick is here. Where's Ellie? I saw his beautiful face. Jake Pasner is getting married soon, a little bit worried about it. Avi Baumel is here, he's married already. Donnie Green has returned. Yaakov Elish is here. Morty Hackle is here. Is there anyone I'm missing? Nobody. Anyway, so this guy befriended me. And I give him credit, I'm a YU guy, I'm an Oisvav, haven't changed my opinions over the years. He befriended me. And we had an honest talk. And the guy, and he said to me, how is it like? So, and I told him, I said, I have to be very honest with you. YU is like a supermarket. When the product is good, it's fantastic. But when the product is bad, it's like a fish that, you know, you can't sell it anymore. And he loved what I answered him. And I said, but with Lakewood, you always have one problem. You guys never had a profession. And you struggle afterwards. And it was such an honest guy. He embraced me, he kissed me, he hugged me, and he told me absolutely true. And he told me about himself, that he finished learning in Kollel. He has 3-4 children already. Has to go out to work. So that dreitz a charum, you know, everyone becomes a stockbroker, real estate, all these professions where they dream they can make a quick killing and take care of themselves for life. But I have to say that I found honesty, at least with this individual, and I found honesty in that article. And this is what the whole concept of standing on the shoulders of Gedolah means. Chas v'chalila, we're not bigger, we don't know more, but we're pasking in 1994, and we see a little better because we have all the generations that came before us. And this is halacha kabatra'i. Okay, I'll open it to questions, but in a minute I have to go further. Yes, Yaakov. Early generations? First of all, the closer you are to the source, the more you know. They knew much more. They had the Rav. You got to remember, from the time they talk about the Chaim, ask sometimes, ask David Miller,
to invite Reb Yosef Soloveitchik of the Old City to give a guest lecture. I don't know, again, you'll have to use me to put pressure on him to accept, if I can do it, because with Yosef, you get, but let him give a lecture to you on the Soloveitchik family. Reb Chaim, at the age of 3, the Beit HaLevi started to cry. He says, "Hu makir et boro." At the age of 3, he saw already that Reb Chaim knew all about God. Isn't amazing? By the age of 5, they were into learning. The Rav knew all of Shas Rishonim. He went away to Berlin. So I got the story before I left. I got the true story. I always wondered how Reb Moshe could control the Rav when the Rav was in Berlin. You know what the answer was? Who do you think sent the money once a month? Who do you think went to the bank when he went to America? Rabbi Lewittis had to go to the bank for Reb Moshe to get a money order to send, you know, it's before checks. Who knew about checks then? To send the money order to Berlin. And the Rav, in return for that money order, had to send Reb Moshe Chidushei Torah once a month. No, the man's mind, that what this kid knew, what the Rav knew in his 20s. And I saw a picture of what the Rav looked like, young and handsome and dashing. I saw a picture, I wish I could show it to you, but I'm not allowed. And he has a lot of hair, and he's posing in the picture with his two cousins, sons of the Avodat HaMelech, of the Rav's uncle. And he's much taller. You see the Rav towers over these two little guys. They're all at the University of Berlin. And the Rav writes him back in a picture to his father, "Mi hachi yafeh batmuna?" Who is the best looking guy in the picture? So you see, the Rav, he was a normal guy. He's at university. He has an ego. He wants to be handsome. His hair is beautiful. And with it all, what that man knew at that age, cut it out. You take an Aaron Lichtenstein. You know something? Aaron Lichtenstein came to YU at the age of 16. He graduated from high school at 14. Between 14 to 16, he sat, I'm telling you, he sat in the Chaim Berlin Beit Midrash and went through Shas. He never forgot one word of Shas. He has not gone through Shas since. His whole knowledge of all of Shas goes back from the... So this is the previous generation. How do we compare ourselves? And the tzidkut, come on, please. We grow up in a world, what these kids go through, what Ribbono Shel Olam with sex and whatnot. You know, we're living in a world today. For a kid to be a virgin at the time he's married, you have to give the kid 5 silver dollars, not just a silver quart. You understand what I'm saying? We're living in a world today. Well, what's going on in the world? The kid turns 14. They're giving out condoms in high school. The Israeli radio with the new government, it's a disgrace. I can't believe the new ad I'm hearing. I thought I was hearing things. Mishrat HaBriyot, well, of course, Shas won't open its mouth. That Derry's coming to trial. I'm going to lift up a phone to my people in Maftal. At least Maftal should open their mouth. Get the air off the radio. When you sleep with your girlfriend, you're sleeping with your girlfriend's previous lover, and her lover's previous sleeper, and the sleeper's previous sleeper, and that sleeper's sleeper, and everyone is sleeping around, and maybe they have AIDS. Please, don't get AIDS. It can kill you. Use a condom. That's the ad. Ribbono Shel Olam, instead of saying, live with Torah, live with purity, don't be an animal, don't be a monkey, don't be a dog, don't be a cat. Yeah, it's just mind-boggling. K'chol HaGoyim Beit Yisrael. And then it ends off. Be'ish. And this ad is put on by the Mishrat HaBriyot. In other words, the government, the public authority of the state. It's mind-boggling. I mean, in America, it's one thing. London, it's another thing. We have to have it in Israel, too. And Baruch Hashem, we have low amount of AIDS here. But with the youth being raised into Shalamet Aloni / Amnon Rubinstein / Shatz educational system, of course, we'll be wiped out within 10 years. There won't be a Jew left here without AIDS, because then no one's getting Torah education today. Why should they? You just need money. Now, so they were greater, and we are smaller, and this is the honest situation. And if you saw greatness like I saw greatness, the question would be, you would understand yourself. Okay, go ahead. Jay. Well, there were claims against the Rakachev, not Reb Moshe. We'll come to that. The Rakachev had a tendency not to go beyond Tosfot and the Rambam. That's true. That's why his psakim were not normative. They're not accepted. We deal with them as curiosos, but we don't really accept the Rakachev halacha lemaisa. All right, so you have a claim. Reb Moshe was a litvusher. You have a claim against the Rav that he never looked at that Malamed Lahoyel. The Rav would shoot you if you brought in such a sefer to class.
understand. I once was listening. It's a true. I've told the story many times. It's an absolute true story. There's a Yachay collar in Sefer Mitzvot. One of the most fascinating Yachay collars out of the early 70s when the Reb was still in his absolute prime. So I get the set of tapes, and you have no idea how valuable these tapes were then because they kept me normal. I was in Olech Hadash with all the problems. And here I'm listening to the Rav, and a student shoots from the audience, "But Rebbe, what does the Maral say?" And the Rav says, don't ask me from the Maral. I apologize to you, but those Svarim were not in my base medrash." And I asked the tape like an idiot. I say, "But Rebbe, Rabbar, the Yosameach and the Meshech Chachma," says the same thing. I start talking to the tape. And I had to catch myself. I was so enthralled with the shiur, I started talking to a tape recorder. And I'm a normal guy. I start. And then I realized, but my question was fantastic. Because what the Maral says is a Meshech Chachma on Pashat Shoftim. I can't go into it now. But the Rav wouldn't have dismissed the Meshech Chachma as quick. But what can I have a tiny? Understand? I spoke about that. That's their approach. You have to live with it. You want to be a Litvish, you have to be a Litvish, as my niece said to me. Yes, Evan. Right. Yeah, well, yeah, go ahead, second question. Okay, hold both questions. The second question I'll start in a minute, and the first question I'll deal with in many lectures this year. Okay? Yeah, no, beside that, Evan, the Rebbe's with you. I read you 1,000%. Relax. Yes, Jason. Well, you see, that was an ultimate authority. The truth of the matter is that I would hate to think that a little chemist differs with a Nobel Prize winner. You understand? So what Smich Ishmi Pish meant, they had an authority that we don't have. Call it historical. I don't mean mystical. Well, no, I would say it's historically, but because they wouldn't. That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Daf Peshet Amid Al Bet. He deals with it there. Mishin Itrabu Tamidi Beitil Beitshamish Lo Shimsu Kotzachin, and that's it. The minute we're Lo Shimsu Kotzachin, the Torah starts going underhill. You follow me? You got to have a lot of years to learn. It's a lot of years of learning. A lot of years. Baruch Hashem. When you have today, I think I know a little bit, but I've been learning for so many years. I see young fellas coming out, and you have to encourage them because they must get their feet wet. It's Skitten V'yad and Boin Kechot. They're both correct. Okay. Gentlemen, we now come into one of the most fascinating topics we will ever touch upon. I don't know if there's a more fascinating topic in Halacha. And it exactly flows from what we've said, and Evan already asked the question. Ramah Shulchan Aruch Hashem Mishpat Perek Chaf Hei Siman Bet. By the way, the Psak in the Shulchan Aruch is based upon a Marik. Again, like everything else in the Shulchan Aruch, you're old enough to know that the Shulchan Aruch basically said nothing of his own. 98% of what he said he takes from the earlier Rishonim, and this he took from the Marik, but Rabbi Yosef Mikolon, but we're going to quote it in the Shulchan Aruch. Ramah Shulchan Aruch Hashem Mishpat Chafei Sipet and Kom, and this is exactly what we're dealing with. Kom Makom Shadiver HaRishonim Ketuvim Al Seifa V'Heim V'Fusamim V'Aposkim Achronim Cholkim Aleim K'mot Shalaponim Aposkim Cholkim Alegoinim Holchim Acharei Achronim. The halacha kabatrayi by the Ravelach. And he says very simply, very clearly, summarizes everything I've said in Shir until now. Whenever we know the viewpoints of the earlier authorities, as long as it was well known, we have a right to differ with them. And an achron can actually differ with a gaon. And he brings down, for instance, we know Rishonim who differed with Goyim. I don't want to get involved now, but I can give you classic examples. When you get involved with the whole question of anach muma, that when a woman needs cleats, remember we spoke about it with the Yavam and the Yavama. Remember I got all confused with the sisters, the brothers. But to say it clearly now, a Yavama needs chlitza, and the brother-in-law from whom she needs the chlitza is a muma. Does a muma create a zikat yibum? Interesting, Shiloh. And many of Goyim said no, because what does the Torah say? Achim yachdav. Brothers have to live together. And brothers means, what does it mean, brothers? That they have the same religion. But Melst Rishonim throw this opinion of the Goyim out. So you see, Rashi argues with the biggest Goyim and says, no such thing. You're born a Jew. I want to think about some headmen say, a rose among thistles remains a rose. Right? Yehudi afapi shechata, the Gemara says, Yisrael afapi shechata, Yisrael. So, the Rama says, as long as you knew the Goyim, halacha kabatra'i, and I can pass them the way I want, and if Avram comes over and he says to me, but the Shulchan Aruch says definitely, the Rama says definitely, the Aruch says, but I have a right to say, I know the Rama, I know the Shulchan Aruch, but I'm passing the way I'm passing, halacha kabatra'i. Fine. And here the firmest waves of the Marik, of the Shulchan Aruch, of the Rama, Avo, Nimtza lefamim tshuvat gong, velo ala zichrono al sefer, v'nimtzu acherim chokim alam, ein tzrichim lefsok et divrei hachronim, shefsha shelo yadu divrei hagaon, v'have shmiluhu hadrei buhu. And these are the unbelievable firmest words taken from the Marik. And what he says very simply is what Evan said. That this concept of halacha kabatrahi is based upon the fact that you say we're pygmies standing on the soldiers of giants. It means we know everything that passed before us. Everything that went under the bridge. And if we know everything that went under the bridge and everything that passed before us, then we know all the previous generations and their teachings. What about if you find the Ketav Yad? The earlier generations didn't know. The Rama didn't see it. The Shulchan Aruch didn't see it. Nobody saw this Ketav Yad. No? Can you say halacha kabatra'i? It may very well be, had the Mechaber known this, had the Raman known this, had the Yerach HaShulchan known this, had Rav Moshe Feinstein known this, had Rav Soloveitchik known this, they would have very well have changed their minds. And that's the way the Rama Paskins says that this whole concept of Halacha Kabatra'i says Marik is right. Halacha Kabatra'i is limited to what we know. What we don't know overturns this principle. Now, gentlemen, if this Rama is right, then the implications in modern times are overwhelming. Because let's understand something, and I don't know, Jason raised the problem, historic problem. I don't know in the context to which he raised it, how much a role history plays and simply are getting weaker as human beings. But when it comes to manuscripts, here we have a real historic problem. Before modern times, Jews did not appreciate the value of manuscripts. Jews didn't understand where they were accessible. When we come into modern times, and we come into the whole development of Wissenschaftes Judentum, scientific Jewish knowledge, and all of you know that the greatest contribution of Wissenschaftes Judentum was discovering manuscripts. And today we know in every university in the world, be it Cambridge, or be it Oxford, or be it St. Petersburg, or be it the Vatican, when Rabbi Lau went to the Vatican, so you know there was tremendous criticism of Rabbi Lau. And the truth is that if the Vatican doesn't recognize the State of Israel within a year or so, Rabbi Lau did a foolish thing. In other words, to go and meet the Pope and go to Rome. You're the chief rabbi of Israel. Let the Pope come to you. But all right, one of the things he justified, see if there would be recognition right away, so then I could understand already he would say, well, I've gained recognition, etc. What did he say to justify himself when interviewed? Do you remember? He went to arrange that the treasures of the Vatican Library should be made available to Jewish scholars. Now you know what the implications are? When I was growing up, nobody heard of Amiri. I told you more than once, I was a poor kid. I grew up in a poor home. And I saved my lunch money to buy Svarim. And I remember I bought a me'iri on Baba Batra, tremendous big me'iri, which was bound in orange, if you can recall, the original edition, the Schreiber edition. I brought it into Shia. I spent $10 on that me'iri, circa mid-50s. You know what $10 was? A train, I think, still cost a nickel. If it didn't cost a nickel, so it cost a dime. Draw your own conclusions what $10 was worth. 100 trips on the subway system in New York. I brought him to Shia. Rav Volk got hysterical. Where do you have so much money to waste on such from? Miriam Nishkata Mirin tells, we didn't have a Mirin tells, and we knew how to learn, and we're going to learn without a Mirin here. He refused to look at it. He got hysterical. Imagine, you discovered one of the greatest Rishonim, a whole world of Mirin. And imagine you're going to find new Pesachim. For the sake of argument, he can the Miri is very makil in Pesik Reishin. Oh, a good deal of Hilchot Shabbat. We can be more makil than we are because of the Miri Shita in Pesik Reishin. Afilu Denichalei. I mean, it's a simple example. There are many examples that will come up. But imagine you're going to uncover Rishonim and Kitvei Yad and Shuvot. Imagine today we'll uncover another 100 Shuvot from the 18th century. From the 1700s, lying in some library, important Shuvot Gedol Yisrael. They found from Rabbi Yosef David Sinsberg, the Minchat Oni, was the Rav of Strasbourg, was a correspondent with the Chatam Sofer. Hundreds and hundreds of Shuvot of his have been published from Kitvei Yad. I mean, there's no end to what you can find, what you can discover. Imagine the Geniza, they find another Geniza, and they uncover Kitvei Yad of Goinim. Not just Rishonim, Goinim. You all know what they found in the Cairo Geniza. And until today, as I've told you more than once, the majority of the Cairo Geniza has not been identified. But I have to say, what remains to be identified are fragments. It's fragments on top of fragments. I don't think there's anything of earth-shaking relevance there. But imagine you find Kitvei Yad, the Rambam, St. Petersburg, the Signet, and who knows what's in the Vatican. And the Vatican confiscated from the Jews, periodically burned the Talmud, periodically confiscated Kitvei Yad from the Jews. Ribbono shel Olam. It could very well be that the Judaism we're living is going to change radically within 50 years, within 100 years. I mean, if this Ramar is right, the implications are devastating to a Torah Jew. Now, and I want to tell you something. I want to make this very real for you. Shaul Lieberman got up at the seminary, Zichrono Levracha. Shaul Lieberman was a Gaon Adir. I don't know if any of you knew him. The man who wall of Shas, Bavli Yerushalmi Tosefta, by heart. The man had an unbelievable mind. He was the Rav's cousin, met by marriage, etc., but an unbelievable mind. And he winds up in JTS. And of course, probably... It always troubled him while he was at JTS, although in later years he defended himself very simply, said, look, I'll be honest with you, JTS was the only place in the world where I could devote 4 hours a week to teaching and the rest of the week to scholarship. And that's the way he defended himself. One time at one of the graduations in JTS in the early 50s, he gets up at the graduation and says, we at the Jewish Theological Seminary are doing exactly what the Vilna Gaon did. And everyone looked at him. And then he went into this interesting theory. How many of you know about the Vilna Gaon's life? How many of you have read the Hakdama of the Vilna Gaon's sons to the Vilna Gaon's Hagot Hagra on Shulchan Aruch? Look into the Aruch Chaim, you see the Hakdama. What was the most salient feature of the Gaon's life? His Hatmada. His Hatmada was legendary. He kept a little... how many minutes a day is Mavatl from Torah, and then he would add it up before Yom Kippur and entire year is Mavatl 2 hours and 43 minutes, and he would cry and ask God to forgive him for 2 hours and 43 minutes of Bikkur Torah. So one of the great problems in the Vilna Gaon's life is that we know in his early 20s or mid-20s, he disappears from his house and he wanders around Europe. He's in Sofia, he's in Berlin, he's in a number of prominent cities. No one knows what he was doing. So, what did Professor Liebman say? He was going to the libraries collecting Kitvei Yad And this is why his Haggadah and Shas and Tosefta are so important, because inevitably, every Tabyad we found bears out the Gaon, and he was looking for Kitfayad. No, with all due respect to Professor Liebman, that is like my saying, I was in Yankee Stadium, sitting in the bleachers, the day that the Bambino Babe Ruth slammed out home run number 60 in 1927. There's only one problem with that. No, what's the problem? Jerry, what's the problem? I wasn't alive yet. As old as I am, I was not alive in 1927. Okay? Even Bill Dickey, the late Bill Dickey, who I didn't eulogize, I should have eulogized him in class, he just died recently, I eulogized him in America, Baruch Hashem. But the late Bill Dickey only came up to the Yankees in 1928. So you understand, the Vilna Gaon, you want to know why he left home? At the Reingegangen in Gullis, that's what Gedolim used to do. The worst thing in the world is to walk into the YU Kolo week after week and people look up to you and say, Rebbe and Rebbe Kefet, and they know you and you think you're somebody. So you go away where nobody knows you, and you stay a year, and then you come back when you're humbled. That's what Gedolim used to do. But it's interesting, because what Professor Liebman was trying to do was to make the Gaon into a JTS person. Now, Einochinami, today we know about manuscripts. And today, many a doctorate was written by people who discovered a manuscript. Today, even yeshiva boys know the value of manuscripts. Today, there's a guy in Cleveland that tells graduate, I believe his name is Avraham Shoshana. He's one of the greatest experts in the world in Kitvei Yad. Today, you open up any publication, be it from Lubavitch, be it from RCA, be it from Lakewood, wherever you open up a publication, people are looking for Kitvei Yad. And Ribbono Shel Olam, if this is true and we continue to discover Kitvei Yad and variant readings and Frankel Rambams, then Judaism can change dramatically. Who knows what's going to be 25 years and 50 years from now. One other story to illustrate the point. True story. I'm a young rabbi. I believe I can change the world. I come to my first position, 1961, Baal Lakin with Pennsylvania. And I'm caught in problems way beyond my ability to handle as a young kid. I'm getting killed. As a matter of fact, I've told you more than once that the famous sociologist, Professor Charlie Liebman, became famous off my tzaras. His first article in 1963, Judaism Summer Issue, is a sociological study of modern orthodoxy in America. The case study about the rabbi caught up in a tremendous machloked. When you read about the rabbi, cross out rabbi and put in Aaron Rothkopf, or Ronald Rothkopf, and you have the whole story. So I get involved there. I have a member of my congregation. Today is a world-class professor, Professor Moshe Greenberg, Cube University, then professor at University of Pennsylvania, the youngest professor ever appointed to U of P. He was 24 when he became a full professor. His father is the late Simon Greenberg, vice chancellor of the seminary. And Greenberg was orthoprax, but far from orthodox. And he gets involved in machloket to me, and I stayed an hour and a half after Habdallah arguing with him with all the professors around. My wife is going crazy where I am. But he said something fantastic. He said, "We today are smarter than the Vilna Gaon." I said, "How can you say that? We today know more than the Vilna Gaon. Because we have modern scholarship technique, and we have manuscripts the Gaon didn't have, and Judaism will evolve and change in accordance with these manuscripts, and Judaism is not static." And Ribbono Shel Olam, if this Ramar is right, and Lahavdil between the Ramar and Professor Moshe Greenberg, who I have nothing against, he's entitled to his point of view. And I was saying, no, we're smaller than the Vilna Gaon, we're smaller than Rav Soloveitchik, we're smaller than Rav Chaim Brisker, and he's telling me, just that we have modern scientific technique, and we didn't have a computer yet. Imagine what he would say today with a computer. But wow, what are the implications for our Torah, for our religion, for what we're teaching, for what we're learning, for the Yoredei you're doing? Ribbono Shel Olam, maybe after living constant fear, they're going to find a new Ktav Yad, and whatever issue in Yoredei you're going to raise, either you'll have to be Machmir, you'll have to be Mekil, and everything you're learning and sweating about today is not going to be Halacha L'maisa 50 years from now, 100 years from now. And this is the unbelievable question that Evan Barth raised as a logical point from my earlier discussion, but I didn't need Evan to raise it because the Rama raises this very question and paskins what he paskins. Now, the article in Tradition that I was so impressed with, and I don't get impressed easily, and I have to tell you on this topic, I already worked on this topic Ribbono Shel Olam, on to 25 years ago, I was sweating out this topic, and I had a lot to say in it then, but I was very impressed with the scope of the article. And I'll give you the source. It's by Moshe Bleich. Does anyone know if this is Rabbi David Bleich? That's what I figured, because the way he writes, it has to be his father's son. The role of manuscripts in halachic decision-making, it's in Tradition, Winter, 1993, pages 22 to 55. Okay. Now, let me begin with the major sources. Again, I'm not going to finish today, but I'm going to develop. I want to start developing. Now, let me go into the major sources. First of all, in the early 70s, believe it or not, I said a shiur on this very topic, and there were only two schools then. Again, it's hard for you to visualize this. There were only two schools catering to people like us at the time. BMT, which had students, juniors in college and college graduates, and ITRI. These were the two schools that catered to Americans. And believe it or not, I said a shiur on this topic, and in ITRI someone said a shiur on the topic, and there was a big machloket between us. The person in ITRI said that he was troubled by this question, and he developed the idea that if a Rishon is discovered in the year 1971, it's no different than an Achron. You don't have to be overwhelmed. A Rishon discovered in 1991 has the status of an Achron, and that was his approach. I'm deeply troubled by that. Bani Shalom, because the Rambam's writings were confiscated by the church, because the Rav Avraham ben Rambam's writings were confiscated by the church, because the Meiri's writings were burned at the stake. And if we're fortunate to discover it 500 years later, 1,000 years later, the Meiri's not a Rishon? Chas v'chalila. But I want to say something else. And I'll give you my source in a minute. The truth is that I don't have to say it in my name, but I'll introduce it this way. You see, gentlemen, when you deal with halacha, and this comes back to what Jason alluded to many minutes ago, you're dealing with a halachic process. You're also dealing, when all is said and done, hashgacha pratit. And at times, the two cannot be separated. In other words, there's so much hashgacha pratit in the history of Torah. You all understand the Jews went into exile, and four Jews were in a ship that capsized in the Gonic period, and they wind up coming to Spain, and that's the way all of Torah begins, in Spain, in Morocco, in countries that later have Gedole Yisrael. You take modern times, it's an amazing thought that we owe our Yiddishkeit, everyone in this room, I don't think there's any exception, to Senpo Sugihara. And this Japanese consul, Takovno, if not for him, me, Yeshiva would have never survived. If not for me, there never would have been Chinuch in America. With all due respects to Rabbi Soloveitchik and YU, that was the highest level. But on the lower level, on the day schools, God have mercy, what would have happened, the compromises that would have been made, the students that would have developed, if not for the Mir, and they came to Toronto, they came to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, they came to Toronto, they came to America, all over America, they came to Israel later. It's all the result of one individual, Senpo Sugihara Zeket Tzadik Livrach. It's an amazing thought. No, if that's not Hashgacha Pratit, I don't know what is. So the same thing, you understand, to me the most salient factor in Torah is tradition. Not the tradition of Broadway, but the tradition of Alach Tzadikim, V'Alach Hasidim, V'Yal Zikneim Chabet Yisrael, V'Yal Pleitat Sofreihem. And to me it's inconceivable that Torah life can radically be changed just because you found a manuscript. Yes, perhaps the Ramah has relevancy in certain areas, in a certain context. We'll deal with it, I understand it. But to go and develop that Ramah into an entire theory that Judaism evolves and the evolution of Judaism and the evolution of Halacha, chas v'chalila. I can't accept that. It goes against my Torah feeling. And ain't achinami. The Meiri remains the Meiri. The Rambam remains the Rambam. But the Shulchan Aruch that we have in the year 1994, the Torah that our fathers and mothers, that Alti Tosh Tarati Mecha that passed on to us, this is our Torah. And you can't take the Torah and throw it out, even if you're going to find a Ketav Yad that we didn't have for 1,000 years. Now, who says this? It's a beautiful letter of the Chazon Ish. All of you know that after the Chazon Ish died, they collected a few volumes of his letters. The first volume has some remarkable letters. This letter appears in Chelek Aleph, and you can always remember it very simply. It is Miktav Lamed Bet, Lev of the Chazon Ish. Now, I know the background of the letter. The problem is that in all these volumes, they were put out in B'nai Brat, they were edited, and they don't want to reveal the shortcomings of the Chazon Ish, so they leave it out. But I happen to know through my students a number of the Chazon Ish's top Talmidim who didn't exactly follow in his path. And they gave me the background to the letter, which I guessed correctly, but it's not clear from the letter. What happened is as follows. All of you know that the Chazon Ish had many students. Some of them he didn't succeed with, in his opinion. So this was a student who went away, became involved in Wissenschaft and Chochmat Yisrael, and he put out a volume, a critique on the Gemara, on Kitvei Yad, on variant readings, on correct Yesart. And the Chazon Ish called him to task. Chazon Ish was very upset with him, and the Chazon Ish called him to task. How could you have this cavalier attitude that you make corrections, amendations in the text, amendments in the text? And he justified himself to Chazon Ish, and echoing the words of Professor Lieberman, he said, what am I doing that's any different than the Vilna Gaon? Didn't the Vilna Gaon make all the Sagot and Shas and all the Sagot and Shulchan and Aruch and all the Sagot and the Tosefta and all the Sagot and Midrash? What am I doing that's any different than the Vilna Gaon? And Chazon Ish comes along, and I'm familiar with the letter. I mean, if you're familiar with it, I don't want to waste time quoting the whole letter. But he comes along and he says to the student, I don't like your attitude to the Vilna Gaon. He says, Gam b'zeh mitchachesh b'shifro b'kidut yitayra. He says, you treat the Vilna Gaon with such coldness. You know, he was a scholar, you understand. I taught in Hebrew University for one term. I left on my own. Nothing to do with not succeeding. I couldn't tolerate it. The atmosphere, when all was said and done, my entire soul is Torah. I know I look like a pushtak, but that's my privilege. But my entire Torah, those of you who know my entire soul is Torah. So I couldn't take it there, the chidud, the attitude, you know, the scholarship. And every professor thinks he's bigger than the Vilna Gaon. And this exactly, he says, how can you relate to the Vilna Gaon like this? He says, the Vilna Gaon, he said, stood in the line from Moshe Rabbeinu Ezra, Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Ravashi, HaRambam, HaGra, that the Torah was revealed to them. That these people were angels. And he says that the Vilna Gaon, perhaps in Ruach HaKodesh, in his Bekiyot, in his Hatmada, was like a Rishon. And that we have to treat the Vilna Gaon. When you speak of the Vilna Gaon, you're talking of the Rambam, you're talking of the Rashba. And therefore he had the right to argue with the Shulchan Aruch in so many places. But how dare you relate to him with such kriyut, without respect and yira, etc. Okay, fine. But that's not the heart of the letter. See, that part of the letter is very fascinating because it explains to a Litvish point of view why did the Litvakim attack the Baal Shem Tov? They ripped the hell out of the Baal Shem Tov because the Baal Shem Tov changed so many halachot or his followers. How come the Vilna Gaon could change so many halachot? So the Chazoni says, Baruch HaKodesh, he was on a line like the Rishonim. Of course, if the Chazon Ish is right, then any chassid can answer, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Baruch HaKodesh, was also a throwback and on a level like the Rishonim. But that's not the important part. Then he gets involved. He says, Then you start quoting the Ketav Yad of Minchin. They found the Ketav Yad of the Gemara. It's the well-known Ketav Yad of Minchin. And he says, on the basis of this Ketav Yad, you're going to throw out all of our Gemara, all of our Psakim. And he says, Hagab Yatzmacha. He says, who says this Ketav Yad is right? When Sofrim had a copy of Ketav Yad and they found a contradiction, what did a Sofer do? He says, what did a Sofer do? They took three Ketva Yad and copied over according to the two that were correct, he says. Maybe this Ketav Yad of Minchin was the one that the Sofer disregarded. See, it's a very important point. How do you know? Just because it's ancient? Just because it's old? How do you know? Not only that, he says, how do you know you have all the Ketva Yad? Ribbono shel Olam, who knows what's going to be found yet? You're going to make a change in the year 1994 because the Frankel Rambam uncovered a Ketav Yad, and in 20 years from now they're going to find something in the Vatican that nobody knew about, and you're going to put out a new Rambam, he says, and a new Halacha, and a new Psak? How do you know that you're going to be right? And he says, no, we cannot approach Judaism this way. Avo kashanu somchim ala Kabbalah, Torah, Rashi, v'tosvat, v'kol ha-chachamim, v'adayhu ha-Torah. That we can be certain of. We know this is the Masorah. We know this is the Torah. We know this is what has been passed on throughout the millennium. But if you're going to come in and start worrying with Kitvayad, ain't l'davah sof. And the Chazon Ish ends off this letter with very strong, strident words. Ukemat shalora iti toelet lahagia el hamet al pi hagisod shenech pasim mehaganizim. Rakulam toelet la veit nishpat la kemet hamet vara ui hayale gonzam shahab said yoter al haskam. And these are unbelievably strong words of the Chazon Ish, that he says, I don't see any toelet coming out of looking around the Gnizot and looking into Cairo and looking into the libraries, and all you're going to do is cause confusion. And he says, the idea is, let it remain buried where it is. Hefseid yoter al hascha. Gentlemen, it's a very powerful letter from the Chazon Ish. I don't agree with everything in the letter. Not that the Chazon Ish needs my agreement, but I only want to say from the point of view of intellectual honesty, you know very well, I'm never one to say, don't do research and don't look into Genesis. But on the other hand, I absolutely agree with the Chazon Ish. There's a Hashkacha Pratit here. Rashi is Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam is Rabbeinu Tam. The Rambam is the Rambam. The Ravid is the Ravid. Ribbono shel Olam, the Shach and the Taz and the Chatam Sofer and the Noda B'Yehuda, and in a few hundred years we'll know from our generation. I've told you more than once, I don't understand the people in America, the modern Orthodox people, have such an inferiority complex that all the right wing has to do is bark and they start jumping, and then you don't even know what went on. That it was one of an unbelievable machloket in New York last weekend, because Thanksgiving weekend Agudat Israel has its annual convention, and this was the year that there's no OU, because OU's once every 2 years. So the modern Orthodox so felt bad and depressed, the Agudat had such a big convention, so they called the convention at the Homowack, and all the modern Orthodox institutions joined in sponsoring it. It was a tremendous success, and they had to turn people away. The Homowack was filled beyond compare. There was tremendous machlokas because Young Israel refused to go along with the call. They are now moving to the right. They said, we cannot tell our rabbis to go to the Homowack. They have to go to the Aguda convention, and all the people in the modern Orthodox world are going crazy, and oh well, we're under attack, and they're under attack, and they're fighting, and you know, I've said to you more than one, what are you getting upset about? You expect a Jewish observer to give Rabbi Soloveitchik a medal? Rabbi Soloveitchik's existence and success and learning in Yiret Shemayim is a total contradiction to their viewpoint of mono-truth, of monolithic truth, Ribbono shel Olam. So what are you getting upset about? And you'll see in a few hundred years, the names that will stand out, I don't want to mention names, but some of the so-called Gedolei Yisrael, they won't even remember the names of the Rosh Yeshiva of Philadelphia. But believe me, or the Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood today, they won't even remember their names. But the Rav's name will be in golden lights, and this is the Masorah, this is the tradition. The Chazon Ish, look what the Chazon Ish reached. He had no position, he never worked a day in his life. Lo aleinu, he never had children. His wife supported him. He sat in the Beit Medrash in Vilna. Rav Chaim Moshe saw this young man sitting there, started to talk with him and learning, almost fainted. He saw who this man was. The Chazon Ish came to Bnei Brak, never had a position. The whole world came to the Chazon Ish's door. This is Hashgacha Pratis. This is not logical. Come on. If you're going to explain everything logically, you're living in the wrong world. That's a world. Maybe animals live in a logical world. Maybe cats live in a logical world. Maybe dogs. But we're humans with Hashgacha Pratis. I can explain my life to you. Rivani Shalom, the Hashgacha Pratit is gluya at every stage. I can explain what happened in Russia to you. Come on, it's tangible. Go and explain. So you have to have a feeling, and I think that the Chazon Ish is absolutely right. And it's not that the Meiri is not a Rishon anymore. Of course he's a Rishon. But you can't throw out the whole halachic process because you discovered a Meiri. Okay, gentlemen, I've just said the first word. Obviously, give me a chance. I have a lot more to say. The next year is unbelievably fascinating. And of course, everything will develop. Who's going to differ? Rav Ovadia Yosef. He's going to come along already. You'll see Rav Ovadia, Kadako Bakoldish. But I'll try to make peace if I can between everybody. Okay, what did I do today? Number one, you have to admit, although I got back Thursday night, I'm not jet lagged. And it's the Rakefit system. I have a system to beat the jet lag. If anyone has to travel, you can talk with me privately. I'll tell you my secret. I successfully defeated jet lag both going, and what's harder is coming. Of course, that's the harder jet lag, coming from there to here. And I davened shachris some time in the plane. The Rakefit system worked, Baruch Hashem, right on. I don't want to boast too much because with airplanes, no one can be overly wise. But thank God, this time I'm totally logical and sane. Even though I'm only back a few hours. What did we do today? We spoke about Minigun. I showed the Nachlat Shiva. Chadashim Mikarov Bo. God, the coin is now split in the middle. You'll have to earn it yet. It's not that I'm cheap, but you can't earn it when you... Hassan Klofa, you don't know what he's talking about. Come on, you got to dish it out properly. Not half a dish. It has to be Dish Shalem. Dava. Number one. Number two, we did what halacha kabatra'i and standing on the shoulders of giants. And the logical question, what about kitvei yad? The whole standing on the shoulder of batra'i is premised upon the fact we knew the earlier opinions. If we don't know the earlier opinions, what do we do about the kitvei yad? And that's the topic we began, and I just put down the first words of the elementary Chazon Ish. You'll understand next week what I'm saying. Elementary Chazon Ish, we have an entire world to build. Gentlemen, do me a favor. Who comes to the Tuesday class? Jay, round me up, students. Cover the Rav. I'm finishing Salu Salu Ponu Derech this week, what the Rav will say with the Kiyat, the Shofar, the Kiyat, the first Kiyat, the second Kiyat. You'll see the Rav. And then I'm doing one of the last talks he gave on an unbelievable level on Yom Kippur. It's already not Tashanut. This talk is already halachic. It's halachic Tashanut, very unique and unbelievable. And then from that point on, it's going to cost bananas to come to the shir because the Rav's Hashgafa, what I have to give you, if you come in for nothing, you won't appreciate it. So I'm going to put Yaakov in charge. $100 IOU note for each shir, Donnie. Nothing less. Prove that the words of the Rav are valuable to you. And Jay, you also owe me the list of the boys that want the gift from the Rebbe, which I give this in great joy until we meet again in health and happiness. Bas Vedanya and Mazel Tov to Uri as he sails to the States.